A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, I'm Nika Simmons, and welcome to the Happy Vagina podcast. Coming up, we have Erica Lust, erotic filmmaker who has dedicated her entire life to reclaiming and reframing pornography into the female gaze. But before we start, I just wanted to say something about pornography and addiction. We understand that pornography can be complicated, whether individually or within a relationship. The current guidelines suggest that porn addiction is more likely a symptom rather than a cause of a deeper underlying issue. If you feel like you or a loved one may be struggling, you are not alone. There are places you can go for support, and we urge you, please make sure you reach out for help. Welcome to The Happy Vagina, a podcast dedicated to celebrating pioneers in the female space who've made a difference in women's health, equality and relationships. Each week, we chat to an inspiring human as they explore the experiences that completely change their outlook, promising not only to educate, but also entertain and enlighten. And today on The Happy Vagina, we have the absolute honour to have Erica Lust with us. Erica, welcome to The Happy Vagina.
Thank you very much.
Did I say your last name right?
Well, you know, it's always funny when people are going for different kind of pronunciations. I mean, I'm Swedish. I was born in Stockholm, and I would say Erika Lust. But when I talk to people in English, normally what people say is Erika Lust.
Erica, I mean, what a God-given name. I mean, why bother correcting anyone?
No, I think it's a wonderful name. It's a name really englobing the whole idea of what I wanted to work with, you know? Lust, this powerful feeling of something that you really, really want. And I think that especially for women, it's kind of a way of daring to go for something that we have not been encouraged to go for.
And as we say at the Happy Vagina, to stay wild. Erica, you are a Swedish erotic film director, screenwriter and producer. And since the debut of your first indie erotic film, The Good Girl, which was back in 2004, you have been absolutely instrumental in promoting the aims of the feminist pornography movement through capturing the female gaze and a dedication to female pleasure. We've kind of already started, but let's just go back to that conversation. How did you come to be working in this field?
It's a long story. It's a really long story. It started really when I was a young adult. I was at university. I was studying political science. And I was curious about sex, like everyone. And I did watch porn. And when I was watching porn, it felt to me somehow that it wasn't that easy as it seemed like for many of my male friends. You know, they were watching porn, they were enjoying it, they had a good time, and that was it. But for me, it was more complex than that. I liked it and I didn't like it. I felt like the women mostly were used as some kind of beautiful objects or some kind of vehicles to male sexuality. They were there to give pleasure, but it was not really their stories that were being told. And it felt to me that there was something not really working. And then what I did was I had many, many conversations with friends, with male friends and female friends. And I kind of came to the conclusion that for men, porn was not really something they were thinking that much about. It was just something they were using. But for most women, there was a conflict in porn. So it wasn't only me. We were many of us having the same kind of conflict. And I was studying political science, gender studies, you know, I was a lot into deconstructing the world and trying to understand power structures and how things kind of were organized in society. And I just couldn't stop thinking about if there was a way that it could be done differently. And it just seemed to me when I started to read up more about it that it was so focused on male pleasure because it was really a genre fought and made for men and by men. There were so few women involved in making pornography. And then actually I started to find some because I found this wonderful book by a film professor called Linda Williams. She was a film professor at Berkeley. In her book, she talked about this other female director called Candida Royale. And when I started to watch her films, she started to make films already in the 80s. And it was just obvious to me that everything changed if you change the perspective. She was telling stories from a woman's point of view. And for me that was kind of my big moment of understanding that pornography somehow is media. And you can make that media with whatever values you have as a creator, as a person. The same way as when you write or when you take pictures or when you paint or whatever art you are making. Mm-hmm. You do that from your own point of view, from how you see the world with your visions. And I think that at that moment, it kind of started to have this idea in my head, imagine if I could do it differently. Imagine if I could do, you know, a pornographic film, but with my values, from my perspective, with my sensibility, and I always loved the film. I wanted to be a filmmaker, but I just thought that it was not even possible for me to go down that road, you know, because I hadn't studied film. I didn't know how to make it. And that's kind of the other part of the story, because that's what happened after. But it all started on this very brainy feeling of there must be a way of changing pornography.
And really interestingly, right at the beginning of that wonderful story, which I would just like to say thank you, I feel very emotional, thank you for what you do. You said, I was studying, or I'm rephrasing, paraphrasing, but I was studying and I was thinking about sex like most people. And we're going to come back to this a bit later, but I think it's really interesting because I don't think women actually do often let themselves have the space to think about sex, even today with the revolution that's happening and through the revolutions of the past. And I think that sometimes us, you and I, are so far inside of it that we forget that women who aren't working in the field actually are really significantly shut down. And I think one of the key ways that you potentially have made your work more available to women and somehow accessible and destigmatized it and taken away potentially some of the shame that could have been attached is that you talk about erotica rather than pornography. And I wondered if you see them as two different things. To me, it has a very different impact on me. And I wondered if you had some thoughts or feelings around that.
Definitely. I mean, I think that what happens with the word porn is that most people, when they close their eyes and they think about porn, what they see in front of them is what the porn tube sites today are showing. That's what they consider kind of porn. But actually, porn is just an expression for showing explicit sex, whether it's, you know, in films or photography. It's explicit, and that's what it entails when you talk about pornography. When you talk about eroticism or erotica, then I think that most people imagine something that is more about the mind somehow, that they imagine something that turns them on, that inspires them. And it doesn't have to be necessarily explicit. But then what I have been trying to do from the beginning really is kind of bringing these two worlds together, because I am interested in the explicit part of sex. I think that it definitely turns you on watching people having sex. But I'm also very, very interested in the psychology that behind my characters. Who are these people? Why are they turned on by something or by each other? What brings them together? What are their desires? I want to kind of understand their sexual journey somehow. So I think that you can definitely have them both together working in a film. And then what I've been working a lot with, I said that you know, I always loved film, and I have become a filmmaker during these years, because it wasn't at all where I was coming from, you know, in the beginning. And when you go back and you see my early work, I mean, technically it lacks some skills, you can see that, but the soul was always there, you know, and the will and the want of showing my passion. But I've learned a lot during these years, and what I have also brought to my films is cinematography. And I think that cinema is an excellent way of showing emotions and using this wonderful kind of language that is cinema. It really can help to get people into the mood, and especially when we're talking about women who many times feel that what they have seen on the porn tubes has very little to do with aesthetics or with the kind of erotica that they would like to watch. Mm,
I think that also, I think that the word pornography has become associated with a more predatory type of filmmaking. And the word erotica still has, I don't know, a sprinkling of the goddess around it. You know, it feels like an ancient word, and a word that is steeped in some more bohemian or spiritual kind of assets, you know.
But then it also depends who you are talking to, because then there are people thinking that erotica is more of, you know, a fluffy genre where, you know, people are making love in front of the chimney and the feathers and, you know, lots of silk and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, champagne and chocolate. And so it all depends on who you are and where you come from and how you kind of define these words, right?
For sure. And also one of the things that I think is really important, which we're going to again touch on later, is this idea of allowing women to step into the fantasy. And I think that, you know, why should we stay in erotica if pornography as a more aggressive word turns us on? And I think the stigma and shame again attached to women and sex can be we need to smash all of it. One of the things that when I was at university, I was very interested. I was actually writing my dissertation on Herculine Babin, who was one of the first hermaphrodites. And I got really interested in sex and pornography. And I remember coming home to my late mother and saying that I was, I didn't understand why pornography wasn't banned. I went through a period where I thought that it should be banned. And my mother, clever Rosemary Brennan, said, it's about freedom of speech. That if we ban, we mustn't ban anything. We mustn't ban anything, because if we ban that, if one day there's an extreme, let's just say, right-wing government in, they might ban something that we do, which we find acceptable. And I wondered for you, because you are an activist around pornography, where do you sit with that in terms of freedom of speech and what happens in the industry for and to women?
Well, I definitely don't believe in censorship. I do think that it is a question of freedom of speech. But I also think that society has changed very much the last 15 years with internet coming into our lives and the tube sites, the porn. When I talk about pornography, I talk a lot about the free tube sites of porn that's out there on the internet. Because if we're going to be completely honest, they have taken over so much of what porn is today. I mean, yes, of course, I exist and we are a few independent kind of pornography filmmakers out there in the world. But still, you know, we represent a little piece, a little scramble if we think about the whole panorama. And I think it's important for people to understand how it's kind of organized, because most of these tube sites, they are owned by the same company. So actually what is going on today is kind of a monopoly on pornography. And at the same time, these tube sites, they are having lots and lots of traffic. We are talking about really, really big numbers. What does that mean? Well, that means that they are becoming very influential. And what is shown on them is what is becoming the kind of the standard of pornography. And honestly, I think that we all know that sex education is not what it should be in our school systems, in most of the countries out there. So what do young people do? Well, they do the obviously. They turn to internet. They turn to these free tube sites to learn about sex. And I think that it's really, really important here that we adult people, that we communicate to younger generations that what they see online on these tube sites, that it's a very exaggerated fiction. It's not the same as sex. It's fiction done by professional actors, acting out certain situations created by people who have decided what they want to watch. And really, I think that what we should do is that pornographic material should be behind paywalls. That's my serious opinion. I think that would help a lot. That would help us to understand that it is actually work, and that the work conditions of the people involved making these kind of movies should be respected and paid for and valued. And I think that if you just put them out there for free for everyone, then we are not really valuing that work. And we are not really, we are just offering it up to everyone when we all agreed on that adult material should be for adults, should be for people over 18.
Yes, I mean, the accessibility to pornography, I remember the moment that it completely transformed. And interestingly, you were working before, I think it happened around the time of what we called the credit card boom, and then the subsequent crash in 2008, and lots of really dramatic kind of crumblings of industries happened around them. And pornography was one of the victims of it, where the regulations that almost had been set up by the people that were working in it, you know, it was very well regulated, better regulated. But also there was a level of understanding between people working in the films. And I think the internet changed things for everyone in so many industries, in the film industry in general, not just in the erotic and porn industry. And today I think that they say 40 million Americans watch porn, often through the tube channels, online every day. And 25% of search engine requests are related to sex. So it's clearly something that everybody really, really wants to talk about.
No, and then it's just understandable that we should talk about these images that are out there. What are they representing? What are they showing? Are there systemic structures there that we are not happy with. And honestly, I do feel that that is exactly what is happening. I feel that in most of these images that are presented to us, we see a power imbalance between men and women. We see lots of sexist images where women are being used somehow to give pleasure, but it's not really about them and their stories. And that is something that I would really like to change. I think it's a powder in making alternative images where we see how people are relating to each other sexually. In a different way than just, you know, bam, 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 penetration, hard vaginal penetration for 4 minutes. And then she's supposed to come in this wonderful explosive orgasm. And as a woman, you watch it and you just feel that is not real. That has nothing to do with most women and how we actually, you know, orgasm. And I think that this is a message that is so important to get out there, especially to younger women, because I received so many emails from young women talking to me about that they believe that something is wrong with them because they've seen porn and they see how other women are working and they can not make it happen for them. And then many of these women, they tell me that when they are by themselves with a sex toy, for example, they have absolutely no problem to reach their own orgasm or to know how to satisfy themselves. But when they are together with a male partner, it seems like they think that they are supposed to behave the same way as they have seen in porn.
So there's a lack of freedom. One of the things that I recently just discovered was actually they did some MRI scanning. You'll know this already, but for those that are listening that don't, where when a woman under an MRI thought about a dildo and having pleasure with a dildo, the same parts of the brain were activated that were activated during foreplay. And foreplay, of course, I think actually for all humans, but particularly for women, is just so important. And I think this idea of being able to access fantasy and access those images that we feel are not ladylike is just really, really important. However, I would say that since you began your excellent work in 2004, there has been a good counterbalance of work like yours in terms of bringing a more feminist and a female eye into the space. If we put aside the YouTube kind of disaster and look at the work that you're doing, how has it been different for you? I would imagine that in some ways business wise it's harder, but have you felt that your heart and your mind has been opened and it's growing? Kind of feminist pornography from the female standpoint?
Well, I've been working very hard to bring in more and more women to this. And I have definitely seen the change since I started. The last 5 years, we have started in our production company to produce and finance other directors' projects. And I have been, you know, I have been really mentoring lots of new filmmakers who wanted to get into this genre and kind of dare to explore their erotic side and see what can they do. And in the end, I mean, for me, this is really the answer. I think that if we agree on that, we like the idea of porn, but we want to change what's out there because we don't really like the systemic sexism that is going on. How are we going to do this? The only way of doing that is really step behind the camera, start writing down our own fantasies. What do we want to see? In what kind of stories? How do we want to live our sexuality? What do we want to focus on? And then start making those films. And I can honestly say that when I look at all these wonderful films that we have made, I think that it's pretty clear to anyone watching it that it is actually very, very different from what we are used to see on these tube sites, you know, this kind of mass-produced porn.
I mean, I enjoy pornography, but what I would say about your work is that I have a different response afterwards. It's very interesting. Some of the shame that is attached to watching normal straight pornography, whatever that means, is it goes when I see your work, and it's why I send so many of our community to you if they want to explore pleasure. Obviously, the Happy Vagina is a significantly female strong community with about 10% men, who I love, and but thank you, all of you. What benefits do you feel there are for men in terms of a different gaze on erotica, and how are men going to really benefit from watching the type of pornography that you make, Erica?
Well, I think there's lots of benefits. And let me also say, talking about men, that I have lots of male followers, and we have lots of men really also enjoying this movement and this kind of film. So it's definitely not that what we are doing is a genre, you know, only for women. It's done mostly by women, but it's definitely for everyone. And I see in the responses and the conversations that I'm having with men, I see a lot of them being very happy to at last have found some films that they can actually, you know, watch together with their couples, with their wives or girlfriends, and that they feel that they can share, and they can, the films somehow help them to open up a conversation about sex, because I see that there's lots of people having trouble or not being so used to actually talk about sex, to have conversations about their desires and what they like and what they don't like, and how, and I think that when they watch my films, they get kind of to take part of how other people in the films, how these characters are tackling their sexuality, how they talk to each other about anything from pleasure to desire to boundaries, or how they talk about you know, the use of a condom, for example. That is still something today that many people are afraid of and don't know really how they can get it into, you know, the conversation about around sex. But I mean, it's so important. The whole, I think that the last years, obviously, we have started to talk about the importance of conversations and about consent and about checking in with your partner and about an enthusiastic consent, not just a no kind of, you know, but to actually having your partner saying, yes, I want to do this with you. I'm happy. I like this. And I think that for men also being able to watch the performers in my films and how they relate to each other, I think that can really help them to see other portraits of masculinity.
Absolutely. And also other ways of giving and taking, receiving pleasure.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
For you personally, your journey with pleasure, has it, was it significantly changed through coming to work in this industry, or has it?
Well, obviously there's been a journey. I think that for everyone there is, and these kind of journeys are not really straight either. I mean, there's ups and downs, and I think that sex is fluid, and that it changes also during life. I also, you know, on my personal journey, I became a mother twice. I have two daughters, and that has also, you know, been a huge challenge to kind of rediscover my own sexuality after, you know, giving birth and trying to understand who I am and what I want and what changed, and to take kind of a control over my own erotic being again, because I think that many women can identify with the feeling of, you know, becoming a mother and getting very much into kind of motherhood, and then starting to feel that, am I just reduced to this now? How can I kind of retake that power that I had when I was, you know, when I was younger and more secure about myself, and oh my God, my body changed. What happens now? Am I a different person or not? You know, it is definitely challenging.
I just want to say that I haven't had children. I mean, your body changes anyway, and I think also, but I love what you're saying around, you know, being a non-linear journey. And actually, one of the things that I've been thinking about recently is how sex when we're teenagers is so status oriented. So there's this pressure on men, boys and girls, young adults, to somehow prove that they've done things and do things like the quality of curiosity, which is something I'm really a big fan of, like finding a quality of curiosity in everything we do in life, is just kind of taken away from you. And especially if you're sexualized quite young, which is not everyone's story, but a lot of people become sexually active at school before they've actually know what they're doing. And then for me, it's like this kind of, oh, and then at some point you hit this wall where you realize you are having sex that actually is not that pleasurable, and you need to relearn for yourself and learn deeply what it is that you like. And for me, that's been the most significant learning over the last few years, is that pleasure starts with me deeply, deeply understanding what I like. And if I don't know what I like, then I can't teach someone else. Pleasure? What do you think pleasurable sex is, Erica?
Oh, it's a difficult question to answer. What is pleasurable sex? Well, it's obviously sex that makes you feel good. But then again, now when I say sex, not necessarily am I talking about together with another person. Not necessarily am I talking about penetration. I think that those things, people get very stuck with them. When you say the word sex, that's kind of what they think, you know. And I really think that pleasure starts with, as you said, it starts with yourself. And if you listen to women's stories, I made a wonderful film called The Female Pleasure Circle, where a group of women were telling kind of their pleasure stories, you know, how did it started for them. And most of these stories, they have nothing to do with another person. It's all about their experience with their own body, and when the body kind of started to, you know, wake up, whether it was on a bicycle or in, you know, the swimming pool with the stream of water. I think that what we all need to understand somehow is that maybe we need to get rid of these ideas of performative images of sex, and we need to take our time, dance, listen to the music you like, you know, feel your body, get into the bathtub, you know, put on a mood, you know, that you like, light that you like, a candle or incense, or, you know, all these things that kind of help you to get into your mood and how you feel. And then I always recommend people to try out sex toys, because I think there's lots of really great sex toys that can help you to find your vibe and your own experience. And then for people who are telling me, especially that I'm good with my toys, but in my sexual relationship with my partner, I can't really find the same vibe. I used to tell them, bring your toy to the sex with your couple. And I'm seeing more and more men opening up to this idea, because I think that many men have been very kind of afraid of the toys, like thinking that's the end for them. And it doesn't definitely have to be the end for anyone. It's just more pleasure for everyone.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I get the feeling that for you, the main block really for women to be liberated, and I'm kind of generalizing, but is the myth of what a woman should look like in sex really, really kind of makes us in stasis and creates a shame bubble of somewhere deep inside the subconscious. We go, well, we don't look like that, so I'm just going to like lie here and do nothing, or whatever your version of that is. And I was watching a film a little while ago. It's a Danish film called Venus, which I'm sure that you have seen. It's a documentary with some quite young women talking about their journey with their own sexual development. And it's a very sweet documentary. But one of the women is saying that she is very sexually shy. She's 30. And when she's asked why, she said the Bible. She said that she learned from the Bible at a very, very, very young age that sex was bad and dirty. And I wonder if that's something that you've looked at or you think about in your work, or are you much more in the present and just empowering women to find themselves?
This idea of the Bible, it's a value that's out there in society, whether you are, you know, strongly Christian or not. I think that we all have somehow this feeling that sex somehow is a little dirty, that it's we are afraid of our own sexuality, of our own perversions. And I do think that if you watch films, that is really a way of helping you to understand and empathize with other people and understand their sexualities and how they react. And I think that can really help you to realize things about yourself. And I see that as very challenging also with my films, because I try, you know, not to get stuck into different genres. I represent a lot of diverse people with different sexualities, different identities, coming together, you know, in sexual experiences. And I'm very extremely happy every time I receive this kind of emails from people saying, hey, Erica, I thought that this was my sexuality, but then I watched this film and I realized that I was turned on by something that I would have never thought that was my thing. And this is something that I even hear, you know, by lots of heterosexual men, actually, that even have, you know, watched a film with two gay men and said, and you know, have written to me saying, like, I was always very afraid somehow of gay sex. I felt that if you are a heterosexual man, you cannot even watch it, you know, you should kind of just shy away the fastest you can. But then I watched this film and I realized, this is a good story. This is interesting. I can actually be okay with my own sexuality, but understand that I can watch them together and I can feel turned on by it. It doesn't mean that I want to be them, but it helps me to understand who they are and, you know...
Well, actually, the young woman that I just referenced in the documentary Venus, she first started to become aroused or awakened when she went to a club and through the peephole saw two male friends of hers actually engaging in sexual intercourse, and she found herself turned on by it. And I think that was a shock for her. And you used the word perversion, and I think It's really a topic that I'd love to explore with you, because there was a survey of like 42,000 people a couple of years ago, and 61% of the women that were interviewed, and they were interviewed as like your films from every single, in fact, they interviewed men, women and non-binary, but I'm quite interested in women for this particular topic. And 61% said that they'd had, well, I mean, the amount of women who've actually had fantasies was off the Richter scale. And then 61% had had a fantasy about being forced to have sex in some way. And I feel that this is a very potent area for women and for us to talk about. I was with a friend recently and she said to me, nobody would want to have their hand on a woman. No woman would really want to have a man's hand on their neck during sex. And I didn't engage in the conversation, Erica, because I didn't feel, I felt I was okay for her to have her opinion. It's not my opinion. And I didn't want to, I wasn't in the mood for an argument. And there is also...
You don't always have to take an argument. That's something that you also learn, you know, especially when you're an activist, that sometimes you are just tired and you don't want to get into it. It's...
Well, she is also an activist and she works in the field of violence against women and men. And I feel that this is actually a very important area, because there's a very thin line between a sexually dominant relationship, whether your relationship be with a man, a woman, or lots of people, where it's your choice and fun, and when it becomes something that you don't want. And I think the latter, where it is seen as something aggressive and bullying at its best, violently wrong at its worst, you know, how do we encourage women to access that more? Because I think it's a missing strand of women's sexual fantasy.
Well, honestly, I think there's a lot to learn from the kink community. I think there's a lot of lessons to learn from people practicing BDSM, knowing about how to have these kind of conversations, how to be very clear with their boundaries, preparing also themselves for situations that might come up where you change your idea during the sex act, for example. Using, you know, words, safe words, etc., to be clear and telling, this is something that I want or this is something that I do not want. But I also see lots of young women, especially, struggling with identifying as feminists, but then also feeling that they would like to be submissive, that they have a submissive side that they really would like to explore, but then they are afraid that if they go that way, that would mean that they are not a real feminist. And I think it's also very important to explain that feminism has nothing to do with your sexual... you know, personality. You can definitely be an activist believing in women's rights, human rights, that we all should have the same opportunities and in this world we live in, and recognizing that there are power balances out there and wanting to change that. And at the same time, you can want you might want to have a sex life of your own where you are together with someone who is more dominant. And those two things can go together.
I think it's just really, really exciting that that's the way you see it. And I hope that people listening to this will take that on board, because there is some scientific evidence to show that there is a direct correlation between pleasure and pain for women. And we're talking about fantasy. You know, this is fantasy, and actually, you know, some of this academic conversation in the head about whether I'm a feminist and stuff, and whether this is wrong or right morally, you know, all of these things stop us from engaging with fantasy. And fantasy doesn't even need to be played out in real life. Just to access it in your brain can be enough, you know. And also, it's a very touchy subject, pardon the pun, but I think fantasy helps with orgasm. And I think that in terms of women And there are a lot of women who really are struggling to achieve climax. And I think that somehow there's something to unlock in one's brain to give you the freedom to reach it, potentially, as long as there's nothing physical wrong. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do agree with that. But I also think that there's a lack of education here, really, for people. I think that there are still so many women out there thinking that you should be able to orgasm just from vaginal penetration. And honestly, research really shows that what most women need is clitoral stimulation. And I think we have, an education gap there, pleasure gap. We have a situation where we're just kind of this really basic information is not known in a, yes, you know, in a greater scale. And I think that if we would just kind of get those ideas out there, I think that lots of people would kind of start to understand what's going on with them. And yes, not feeling that there's something wrong with them. But then, yes, but then, of course, I mean, and porn is probably also, has played a role here, because porn somehow has made people believe that orgasm is always the end of sex somehow. And I think that we also need to get a little rid of that idea. It doesn't have to be the end of sex. We have to kind of to deconstruct the structure of how sex has to happen. So first the foreplay, and then there will be, a blowjob, and there will be cunnilingus, and then we will do this kind of penetration, and then we will do, we will turn around, and then we'll be this, and then, he will come, and that will end everything. It's not, this is a porn formula on many of the tube sites that are out there, but it's not necessarily the formula. I'm not saying that it could be the formula, but it's not necessarily the formula that will work for you.
Well, interestingly, I don't think it's just the porn formula. I think it's all feel. I mean, obviously, blowjobs don't happen in Hollywood movies, but actually...
The truth is, not yet.
Sometimes they simulate a little, you see, kind of going down, yeah, and then out.
Yeah, but this formula is not just, when we don't just learn that through porn. We learn it through the movies as well. There's kissing, which is their version of the foreplay, actually. So pornography, you may get 1 second. 30 seconds of foreplay before we move straight to penetration. So I think that Hollywood has a big part in it as well. If you were going to give somebody... I love what you said about taking the focus off of the orgasm and the climax. And if you were going to give a kind of a suggestion or a tip to a woman who was struggling with her... with that as being a dialogue in her head... I think it can be very bad for one's mental health. What would be your suggestion? Not physical, as in not go and have the bath. You know, some of the amazing things you said already, but do you have any tips on how to manage one's mental health around potentially the feelings of failure?
Well, I mean, my biggest tip would kind of be not to do it in front of someone else. I would say stay yourself, by create your own little world and try to make it happen in your world, because if you have audience, then it will probably be more difficult.
Very difficult. It's very difficult. Erica, I just find your work so amazing. Before we come to an end, I just wondered if there was a moment that you can remember in your life that was really significantly a game-changing moment. We've touched on so much, and of course becoming the filmmaker that you are is one. But was there anything else more personal that really transformed your being?
Yes, definitely. For me, something happened when I was younger, and it was when I discovered Barcelona. for me, this changed when I decided to move down to Barcelona. I think I became myself in that moment. I think that I was really, you know, searching for myself, feeling somehow that I hadn't really found who I wanted to be, or somehow. I mean, people are always, when they talk about Sweden and they think about Sweden, they think of a very open, liberal society. So I guess what I'm saying somehow is shocking to people, you know, but Sweden is also kind of a mixed society somehow. There is this feeling of I don't know if you watched the movie Fanny and Alexander of Ingmar Bergman, showing, you know, these two very different worlds, the more Puritan world and the more liberal open world. And I think that those are definitely going on at the same time in Swedish culture, and I know that lots of people probably know what Jantelagen is, this kind of lay that is that exists in Swedish society, and that has to do with do not think that you are too much, do not think that you are more important than other people, etc. It kind of puts you down a little. And I think that I always had in Sweden growing up, I always kind of had this feeling that I wanted very much, and I was kind of, you know, a hungry person, and somehow I was always a little kind of put down, you know. People were saying, don't be too much, don't be, you know, don't be too red, be more beige or gray, or, you know. And I think
it's interesting,
when I came down to Barcelona, I kind of I let myself out of that self-control somehow, because it was me many times, you know, controlling myself. Don't laugh too loud, don't, you know, dance too much, don't be too wild. And in Barcelona, I felt that I really found a society, a very cosmopolitan, liberal, open society with lots of people from different cultures and lots of people from different kind of identities that had already kind of dealt with who they wanted to be. And for me, that really helped me to get out of my cage and to dare to become the Erika Lust that I now am.
I think Sweden does. It's interesting. That is one of the things that I'd really hoped we'd touch on, because Sweden has a great reputation, and I don't know if it's a myth or not, and you've just touched on it, for having equality for men and women that you don't really have in other countries. However, there is something about it that is very clean. Very clean and doesn't have a bohemian spirit to it, really, being Swedish ancestry myself. Whereas Barcelona is, as you just said, and the word that I love at the moment is wild.
Wild. It's a wonderful, wonderful world.
Anything goes in Barcelona. Also very cosmopolitan, she said. Erika, just to end, if there's any younger women or any women of any age listening who would like to follow in your steps and join the revolution of making erotic and pornographic film or audio, how would they start?
Well, it depends a little on where you are and what you have done, obviously. If you are already a filmmaker, I have opportunities, because I have an open call out there always. You know, and people are sending lots of projects and we are reading them and we are responding. And if you have an idea for a film, maybe I can make it happen. If you want to, you know, to get into kind of the community and see, well, what is going on and what are other people doing, I can totally recommend exconfessions.com. That is, you know, this site that I created a few years ago, where people are sending in their anonymous fantasies, sex stories, things they have done or they want to do, or perversions, or, you know, situations. And then what I do together with this wonderful team of filmmakers that I have is that we pick the stories we like the most and we make films out of them. So one thing that I can recommend if you want to, you know, get started is tell me your story and let's see if we can make a film out of it.
Oh, I love that. I'm going straight to my desk to write some for you. Erica, thank you so much for joining us on The Happy Vagina today. It's been an honour to chat to you.
And more happy vaginas. That's what we need in the world.
More happy vaginas. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.